Hello and welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. This episode is entitled Escape from South Plainfield, which is the name of the town that my esteemed guest and I grew up in.
Esteemed
guest, yes. One of my oldest friends, actually, I think. Yeah, people I know. I've known Mr. Chris Q. Murphy the longest.
That's
about.
That's pretty crazy.
That is insane. And what we're going to talk about today is about, I guess the way you put it when you approached me with this idea, is whether or not growing up in the suburbs makes or breaks you. And how do you get away from that if you...
Or not get away.
Or not get away, yeah. This is a possibility.
Or how much you get away.
Or how much do you, can you escape from South Plainfield? And that's more of a metaphysical question. Because you can just get on 287 and you're
and
gone.
Yeah.
You know, we got our own off-ramp, too, in fact. Yeah.
Both ends of town.
Yeah, so we got two off-ramps. We're good. But can you metaphysically, psychologically, get away from South Plainfield?
Wow.
Yes.
I feel like we should have recorded this in South Plainfield.
You know, no. I don't know, is Rodolfo's still open?
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay, well, that's right now the thing that I miss about South Plainfield.
It was right up the block from your house, too.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Every Wednesday night.
Really?
Every Wednesday night we got Rodolfo's pizza for dinner.
I think we had pizza Fridays at home, maybe. But every Wednesday, Rodolfo.
Yeah.
There was almost, I don't know if you remember this, there was like a Rodolfo, there were a couple pizza rivalries in town.
Oh, yeah, which.
There were Naples people.
There were Naples people.
And that was right around the corner from Rodolfo's, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Chicho's came in.
Yes.
Over by the park. And then I think that at some point when I was in college, I counted up and there were like 23 pizza places in our town of 26,000 people.
So that's one pizza for every 10,000 souls. Yeah.
No, for
For every 1,000 souls.
For every 1,000 souls.
Wow, I'm not a math person. So I think we should start with kind of what you do and what you are and how you can illustrate that to all the good folks listening, wherever the hell they might be listening.
All right. I got a song.
He's got a song, folks.
I got songs. It's what I do. It's a song about escaping from South Plainfield or not escaping from South Plainfield.
Metaphysically.
Sally, Matt, and Vincent were three archetypal children of that old suburban middle-class malaise. So they read up on beat authors, bought a Datsun and an Atlas, put a circle on the calendar and counted off the days. Just an hour past graduation, they gathered the essentials with anything but hear their manifest. Three kids, a pack of cigarettes, a camera and some mixtapes, hell-bent, sun-drenched and drunken on the promise of the West. Where have you gone, Richard Brautigan? For your eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the going against the stream. And what of you, old John Hartford? I just tore down those tall buildings and I'm steaming up the river of my father's dreams, just an hour past, that's not the words at all, but these are, as they rode into the sunset, Sally's feet were on the dashboard, while Vinny strummed his Gibson in the back, Matt hunkered down at 10-2, his eyes on the horizon, as he drove them through each cornfield, and each purple mountain pass. Yeah, Vinny played and Sally sang the soundtrack to their travels, gently tracing. Why can't I sing the fucking words to my song right? I haven't escaped the suburbs yet. God damn, this is an abortion of an attempt at the song. I'm gonna go back to the beat. I just killed the entire mood, the entire flow. This is supposed to be a song about being on some sort of road trip, and this is the part where you apparently get a fucking flat tire and you're stuck there waiting for AAA to show up. Still waiting on the on-ramp to 287. You You think you're going places, you're like fucking 6 miles from your house. I'm just gonna start this verse again. As they drove into the sunset, Sally's feet were on the dashboard, while Vinny strummed his Gibson in the back. Matt hunkered down to 10 and 2, his eyes on the horizon, as he drove them through each cornfield and each purple mountain pass. Yeah, Vinny played and Sally sang the soundtrack to their travels, gently tapping out the beat on Matthew's thigh. She navigated nimbly from South Bend to Pensacola, gently tracing highway maps with a lover's sigh. From brilliant to defiance, from comfort to Laredo, at intercourse they stopped by signs to laugh. And at every railway crossing they looked for sooty sunflowers and retold parents' stories about how they dodged the draft. Where have you gone, Richard Broad, again? For your eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the going against the stream. What of you, old John Hartford? I just tore down those tall buildings and I'm steaming up the river of my father's dreams, father's dreams. It was a motel out past Phoenix wherein Sally cornered Vincent with her hair let down and toenails painted red. She whispered in his ear, I love your penchant for disaster, and then laid her naked body down upon that big white bed. But that old charmer Vincent, he just kissed her on the forehead and then conjured up the wryest smile he could. Gazed into the middle distance, then he uttered this pronouncement, I can only keep from feeling bad when I'm up to no good. But poor Matthew, he knew nothing, focus fixed on the odometer as the pages on the calendar flew by. A laundry list of cities passed as Vinny quoted Kerouac, and Sally laughed and tried to put her worldly doubts aside. Where have you gone, Richard Broad, again? For your eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the going against the stream. What of you, old John Hartford? I just tore down those tall buildings and I'm steaming up the river of my father's dreams, father's dreams. Well, they hit the hate at 2:30 with Sally feeling queasy, but Vinny, he just split for city lights. And Matthew looked so nervous and Sally looked so tired, and they found a place for two to crash the night. Matthew looked at Sally. Sally looked right through him. As they turned the covers back, she bowed her head and said, this isn't that romantic, but that road goes on forever, and I've got an extra mouth to feed and a lonely, lonely bed. Some say Vinny died a junkie. Some say he published poetry. Some say that he just kinda disappeared. That don't matter much to Sally. She and Matt, they barely mention him, as regrets and consolations fade with every passing year. And that's how babies beget babies, beget sullen mediocrity, and settle down just miles from where they're born. They get medical and pensions, a split level in Metuchen, diminish every dream they had and every oath they'd sworn. But their kids, just shy of 20, say unpack those dusty albums, let's see every place you went and book you read. They can feel the yellowed pages and the promise of young faces, but can't recall the people that they were or reasons that they went. I can still hear them sing, where have you gone, Richard Broad, again? For your eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the going against the stream. And what of you, old John Hartford? I just tore down those tall buildings, and I'm steaming up the river of my father's dreams. Where have you gone, Richard Brautigan? For your eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the going against the stream. And what of you, old John Hartford? I just tore down those tall buildings, and I'm steaming up the river of my father's dreams, father's dreams.
That's a lot of words to remember.
Yeah, but they're all really good words.
Thanks. Good words. My wife and I wrote that together, actually.
Aww.
She didn't grow up in South Plainfield, but she gets it.
Oh, okay, she gets it. I think for folks who don't know, like everybody, about South Plainfield, except for people we grew up with, how would you describe South Plainfield, New Jersey? Because
it is a prototypical suburb, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure they exist all over the country, but I think that outside of New York in particular, whether it's in Long Island or whether it's in New Jersey, there's a kind of safe sameness.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, between 10 and 20 different house designs kind of dappled throughout the town. You know, there's very...
McDonald's.
There's plenty of... But the funny thing about us growing up in the suburbs, especially in the Jersey suburbs, is it was a sort of pre-sprawl suburbs. There were still a lot of individually owned businesses, which is pretty different than if you go out there now.
Yeah.
You said you haven't been to South Plainfield in a while. I still...
2000.
Whew, that's a long time.
Yes.
In that time, there have been so many more national chains that have moved in, not only kind of on the outskirts of town where like the mall always was,
mm-hmm.
or the quasi-industrial or commercial part of town was, but even, you know, the first drug fair ever was in South Plainfield, New Jersey. Drug fair, which was like a regional chain of drug stores.
That
the first
sold
one ever.
A shit ton of crap.
Yeah, it was
like drugs way in the back, and then...
lawn chairs
and greeting cards. Chairs
it was
and greeting cards
just like you'd find at a CVS or a Rite Aid or a Walgreens or whatever one you have in your town. Drug fair was like the regional chain in the Northeast and the first one ever, but now that same spot I think is a Walgreens now.
And
there's a lot of other places like that where it's just I think we're okay.
Yeah,
it's national chains have really taken over. Anyway, it was pre-sprawl.
Pre-sprawl. I believe when we were in high school, there were still two working farms in South Plainfield.
No shit.
Yeah. There were two farms. There was one way at the south end of town. I don't know the street name, but I remember seeing it there. And I remember somebody mentioned that in high school, and our teachers mentioning that in high school, that there were still two working farms there.
Wow.
You know, yeah. I mean, and I know my dad bought... We had one of the non-standard houses in South Plainfield. My dad bought the house I grew up in, or did most of my growing up in 1953.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he added on to it and stuff. And
yeah.
You know, and it was on Sampton Avenue, which used to be the entire town, was once that street.
Yeah.
And then everything else sort of grew up around it, but...
In nice little parcelized developments.
Yes.
That's something that I think is something you see in most suburbs, and I think that South Plainfield did to a T.
Cul-de-sacs.
Not only, little cul-de-sacs, but, there are four major roads, and in the middle, there are tons of little tiny windy streets and connective streets that are great for riding your bike on and playing ball in.
Yeah.
And then on the other side of one of those four major streets is another, you know, I don't even know the word I'm looking for, but
Levittown,
See, it's not quite so Levittown-y.
Yeah,
it's a little more interesting than that. But at the same time, the people that were there, the generation before us, and maybe even before our parents, were there for the same reason that people were in Levittown.
Yes,
you know,
which I remember when after I went to college because I got out, and then I was living in Pittsburgh at the time. The Nation tried this thing where they were going to do an article about every state.
Okay.
And I don't know if it lasted. It was kind of like the Surf John Stevens you know, concept album.
And his
got like passed. Three in there. It's like Michigan, Illinois, and then we're done. Yeah. You know.
And now the BQE.
And now the BQE.
Which he did at BAM. I don't know if you knew about this. He did. Yeah. So anyway, I'll shut up.
Yeah. But they did one about New Jersey. Like one of the three that they did, and maybe I let my subscription lapse anyway, but they... there was a line that New Jersey is international shorthand for soulless commuter dump. So if you like that, the idea that New Jersey is now everywhere.
That's.
And I think that's the thing about it, though, is that it's everywhere and kind of nowhere at the same time.
And it's funny because right after I got out of college, I worked way up in Northwest Jersey, mm-hmm. which is still pretty rural. They had a Walmart and all.
Yeah.
But they had a Walmart. In the way that rural Southerners have
Walmart. A Walmart, yeah. It was the store that had everything in the place that had nothing.
Yeah, but it was crazy rural, hunting and fishing and farming communities. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the really like incredibly diverse things about New Jersey, which is this tiny little state, that there's that and all...
Pineys.
All MTV... Yeah, there's the whole Piney thing down mm-hmm. south. Mm-hmm. All MTV jokes aside, the Jersey Shore is a legit cool thing. But we didn't grow up in those places.
No, we did not.
We grew up in the land of mediocrity.
We absolutely did, which an experience, like a watershed experience I had when I was in college. And I went to St. Francis. It was then St. Francis College, now St. Francis University in Loretto, Pennsylvania, which is straight up middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Like middle of nowhere, buying groceries was at least a 10-mile round trip to get to a store or a convenience store or anything. There was one business in town. It was closed after 6 o'clock. We had a stoplight, but it was broken and there were birds living in it.
Of course.
You know, I mean, it was that middle of nowhere. In the summer, it was a copless town.
Whoa.
Yeah, I mean, it was that rural. And I remember... when I did theater, our director, a man by the name of Kenny Rosinski, who has been a huge influence on my life, he would sometimes, like, because he identified people, and, you know, we would have a rehearsals, and then after rehearsal, we'd have notes. You know, this is how you screw. Yeah. You missed that lighting cue, you flubbed that line, when you pick up the tray, don't do it way, exactly. That kind of stuff. But he had this uncanny way of sometimes of... calling people almost on their metaphysical bullshit and what was wrong with them psychologically. You missed that cue because... And I don't know how it happened, and he was talking about me. And he said about how, you know, in 30 years almost of teaching at St. Francis and having New Jersey kids, you know, go there, that nobody from New Jersey ever says where they're from. And I was doing this at the time. It was always, they would never name the town. They would name the proximity to where it was. And so you're 20 minutes from New York City, Philadelphia, or the shore. You're never from anywhere. And because of that, you never name the town. Because if you did name the town, it would like be like Portage, Pennsylvania or something. It would be just some podunk town in the middle of nowhere. And that wouldn't be in any way epic or meaningful. And I realized that at that point, I was 20 years old. And I had never, ever probably told anyone I was from South Plainfield, New Jersey. Not on the first try. You right. You had to pry the town name out of me like it was some kind of state secret. Like I had to be like... waterboarded and shit to say I'm from Edison. No, I'm from South Plainfield. I really, you know,
right.
But I grew up in Metuchen. You know, my parents' first house was in Metuchen.
See, yeah. I would tell people. Well, to be fair, I didn't go that far for college.
Yes.
I went to school in New Jersey.
Yes,
in Princeton, New Jersey. Not to Princeton, please. This is already kind of a hoity-toity fuck you podcast. So let's not pretend that I went to an Ivy League school on top of that.
Yeah.
I'm self-righteous for other reasons.
Yes.
I went to school in Princeton, New Jersey, which is quite different than South Plainfield, although still suburban.
Yeah.
You know, it's a kind of typical college town, which South Plainfield is not.
Yeah.
So I could say where I was from and hope there was like a 40% chance that people had heard of it.
Yeah.
Because they'd passed by it on the highway or something.
Yeah, because we had the two signs on 287.
Right.
Yeah.
But I would say I was from South Plainfield, and then like I had a little litany ready about where it was near in case they didn't get it. I was like, well, it's kind of near this. It's between this, this, and this. And if you've ever seen this. So I was hoping that people might understand.
Yeah.
Which they didn't.
Which I think there's also that thing, you know, and I think it goes back. I want to talk about your song that you just played, too. is that it's weird that, like, in a way, when we talk about what does it mean to be an American or what the American dream is, that in a way a town like South Plainfield is so the American dream, but in a way so anti-American. Like, American, that idea of it being adventurous, being a part of something. And that town was really, and those are some of the themes in that song, but in the town itself is adventure, and being a part of something is not a way I would describe that town.
No, not at all.
You know, it was, we were near something. We were near something and kind of on the outside looking in, or watching Eyewitness News and saying, oh my God, there's stuff in Brooklyn.
Yeah, it's, which is where we are now, I guess.
Which is where we are now, which is as important to mention that, yeah, we're in Brooklyn. We're here. Over Park Slope.
Or yeah, Gowanus, Slope area.
Yeah.
Where this hotel is only 3 years old. This was not a hotel a couple of years ago. Yeah. But yeah, I guess that's worth noting that we are in the Brooklyn. Place we saw on the news.
Yes, well, you and you chose to live there. I chose to live in another city. I will say, some point next year, I have this invisible marker at somewhere in my 36th year, because I was 3 months into being 18 when I left for college, and I lived in rural America pretty much full time for 4 years.
Yeah.
Then I lived in suburban Philly for a year. So I'm thinking sometime in the next year or 2 years, I can now say I've lived half of my life not in the suburbs, because I don't count the Loretto years.
Nice.
And I live in the city of Pittsburgh, so I can say at least now I can make maybe 51% of my life. If I died tomorrow, 51% of my life was not somewhere in the suburbs.
See, I have a ways to do that, and something that we can choose or not choose to delve into at any point is the question of, even within the context of urban life, how urban or suburban are some of the life choices that we've made? This is something not only that I think about every time I play that song,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully sing more of the words right, but it's something that I think about every day.
Yeah.
Because the people I spend time with in the city, some of them anyway, and then the people I still spend time with in Jersey, predominantly family, have two very different sets of values.
That's true.
And I don't just mean in the grander sense of things, like, you know, Republican stump speech
mm-hmm.
values.
Mm-hmm.
I mean day-to-day.
How you live your life, yeah.
And it's very different, and it's something I'm constantly trying to come to grips with on both sides.
This is true.
Like, I have a community, or a couple communities of artists and musicians that I'm different levels of loose or tightly attached to,
mm-hmm.
that influence the way I make art and the kind of work I do, and that's obviously a huge part of my life. But I also don't work at a coffee shop or video store, so I can go on tour next week.
Yeah,
you know, I'm in my 30s. I'm married.
I have a little one.
I have a little one at home. I've been, you know, a public school teacher for 14 years. So even though I've chosen to do this in an urban environment for the last 11 years anyway, it's been a quasi-suburban style living.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a car in the city,
mm-hmm.
and you guys saw yesterday when we were driving around that where I live is a fairly laid-back, borderline suburban-looking part of Brooklyn. As opposed to, you know, the more urban stuff, even where you guys are staying right now, you know.
Yeah, which, and that's the funny, the Greenfield, the neighborhood in Pittsburgh I live in, there used to be a sign that said, welcome to Greenfield, a suburb in the city.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen where you live, and it definitely does have that borderline suburban
vibe, yeah. And I guess, though, too.
And you guys are homeowners.
We are homeowners.
That's worth noting, which is.
Homeowners, I drive a Buick, I own a table saw. You know, I mean, you don't
I
get
would
more
own a table saw. I had space.
More, I have space for that kind
crib
of
or table saw.
Crib or table saw. Yeah, I guess the kid needs somewhere to sleep for now. But
and a table saw is a bad idea. He shouldn't sleep on a table.
He should not sleep on a table saw. Well, as long as you don't keep it plugged in,
I guess.
You know, and there's safety features on there, so you know. But yeah, I know what you mean about that being kind of legit above ground. I, you know, chose to drop out of society but still be legit going to graduate school for a decade.
Right.
You know, and now this fall will be my eighth year as a college professor.
Now, wait a minute. Rewind, though. Hold on.
Okay.
if we want to talk about whether or not that's like a South Plainfield value or an urban value, I hate to shit on people that might still be living there or whatever, but I'm curious about the people that maybe we graduated high school with that have chosen to go on to higher education. Because I don't know how many people are pursuing PhDs coming out of South Plainfield High School. Because higher education is not a huge deal. And that's not so much a value judgment as in a recognition of what is valued.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the number of people that we graduated with that went on to kind of maybe form their own landscaping businesses in the burbs or do something like that is probably higher than the number of people that went on to get their PhDs.
Yeah. And well, I mean, I think nationally, we're somewhere between, not to be like, I have a PhD and whatever, 1 in 3% of people get PhDs in this country. And it is this weird thing about, what is valued, you know? Because it's something where you go to school for 10 years and there's still no, I've been quite lucky in my time, but there's still no guarantee that after 10 years of schooling, you actually get to make a living.
Right.
You know, I mean, I could have had a nicer house and a bigger car and a home with a driveway or something, I guess, if I stayed in Ocean Freight. Because I did try being corporate, and I was an Ocean Freight forwarder for a year. And then I tried being a publication assistant for an academic journal for 2 years. And I just kind of went batshit nuts. And I needed something where I could be a little more proactive about my life.
And you probably have a fancier word because you know books better than I do. But that's the telling point right there. That's the kind of the I can't think of the fucking word. Well, that's what this all rests on. That you couldn't do that.
Yeah,
and you needed to make this choice.
Yeah,
for yourself that wasn't necessarily tied directly to financial security.
Yeah.
Or home equity.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the key differences. Now, I'm not out there gambling with my paycheck. I don't mean literally gambling. Yeah. Although, you know, we could go down to the horses if you want right here in New York City.
Yeah.
I'm not gambling with a paycheck in such a way that I'm, like I said, working at a coffee shop by day and planning my next tour at night. Although there's part of me that wishes I was doing that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, all the decisions I make are not ultimately tied to this American dreamy sense of security that was the people attempted to instill in us having grown up in the
South Plainfield and making that decision,
You know, and it's funny because it can't help but feel a little judgy to think about things this
way. I can't help it, but I can say that for me, and I've calmed down a lot now that I'm a broken old man of 30, soon to be 36.
Oh, dude, you got to be careful with that shit.
I'm broken, and I'm gray, I'm fat, you know, this is bad. This is bad in so many levels, but for me, a lot of it, though, was that lifestyle, that suburban lifestyle, made me so unhappy. And I think living in different places and having... I grew up in the suburbs. I lived in the country. Mm-hmm. I lived straight up whatever, you know... What is that Jimmy Carville thing about Pennsylvania? There's Pittsburgh, there's Philadelphia, and then Alabama in the middle. I mean, I was in Alabama. Yeah. The Alabama section of Pennsylvania. And then back to the suburbs a little bit. And then back into the city. And the one that I liked the least of those three American ways of living was the suburbs. And it made me so unhappy and so miserable and so angry. And I think about sometimes how the people we grew up with could be kind of vicious. And how much of it was you grow up in a place that, in a way, it's safe, it's secure, but it also maybe strips people of that sense of place and strips people that sense of identity. And I could say that, you know, one of the other things about how I am now, I haven't worn a colored clothing item except for a wedding and a ugly sweater show Christmas party since 1999. Like, I have a gray shirt at home. That's it. Everything else is black. I don't have other color clothes. And part of that was because when we were in school, almost every day somebody asked me where I got something I was wearing. as a way of kind of figuring out where I fit or how my family was doing.
That's the weird shit right there.
That's the way that I think if people like need something to fulfill those esteem needs, you're not going to get your esteem needs being from Sal Plainfield.
No, not at all.
Unless it is a really like hateful shitting out of, well, we're not Plainfield, we're not the city where it's dangerous and evil and you could die.
Yeah.
And there's minorities or whatever, you know, which is also part of that, which I get, you know, interacting with, you know, there's some good people I know in the suburbs of Pittsburgh, but there's also like, they would really be scared to spend the night at my house. There's no reason to be scared. Really? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I love spending the night at your house.
Yeah, my house is awesome and my neighborhood is okay. But, you know, that idea that, you know, it's also maybe in a way that other lifestyle, that suburban lifestyle, is about shitting out other people and is about getting away from other people as opposed to learning to live with other people or just kind of going along to get along. So it is weird. It is judgy to say we've created this lifestyle, but that other choice that was kind of inherited or was given to me.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a non-choice.
Made me just chronically angry.
It did. Back then, Matt was always had an undertone of anger in everything he did.
That everything, this is true.
He was one of the youngest true cynics I ever knew. Seriously, you were a cynical bastard in high school.
Yeah.
You really, and one of... And it's funny because I had a lot of the same value judgments of my place already. I just dealt with it in a different way. And not a better or worse way, just a different way.
Yeah.
But yeah, you were ready to throw everything around you, except for like a select few people and things, completely under the bus.
Absolutely.
Whereas I was a little more of a joiner and was trying to still make the best of whatever I was kind of stuck in, what have you.
Yeah, I guess my whole thing is, I guess 18 could just one of those things, you know, that if you want to quote, is it Lou Reed, you know, the best thing about coming from a small town is that you can leave it. You know what I mean? Again, I found that in college. Thanks, Mr. Rosinski.
Nice.
Professor Rosinski played that song for us once when we did a unit on Andy Warhol, you know, and
awesome.
and then it was like, oh yes, you know, of course Andy Warhol actually went. The family church, the Warhol of family church, is in my neighborhood in Pittsburgh.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Awesome.
And so he didn't really come from a small place. He came from South Oakland, which is now the Pitt and CMU student ghetto.
Student ghetto. You know? I lived in the Princeton student ghetto when I was in school. Not even student ghetto, but there was definitely what would have been considered the ghetto in Princeton, because Princeton is pretty tony. But it looked, the part of town that I lived in looked actually a little bit like Greenfield. That side of town I lived in. I forget what people called it. It had some sort of weird derogatory name.
Yeah. Well,
and,
with,
you know.
Well, South Oakland, they used to have a community newspaper. And they used to have the South Oakland Community Design Awards. Okay. And one of them was, it was Best Random Pile of Garbage. You know, or Best Use of Indoor Furniture on a Lawn. Like, that stuff. Best barred window storefront. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so stuff like that, that's what it is. And so it's if you want to you know, share an $800 a month two-bedroom apartment with six people, that's where you live in that neighborhood.
Wow.
And that's where Andy Warhol grew up.
That exists.
That exists in Pittsburgh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What am I doing here?
I know. You can do what I do. Buy a house for less than the price of a luxury car.
Yeah, but I'm here because I have a pension here.
Yes,
there's
you do.
The suburban choice right there.
Well, I think, though, there's something to be said for, I think people get too hung up on being a bohemian artist and that being an artist means being poor or being an artist means that somehow you have to struggle and you've had to have an unhappy childhood and all that shit. I mean, what's wrong with getting paid? What's wrong with sort of professionalizing what you're doing to say, okay, I'm doing so. I mean, you know, adjunct faculty kind of sometimes have the same thing where it's like, just be happy you're teaching in college. Don't worry that, you know, less than one student's tuition pays for what you're making for that class, or view the hours you put in is about minimum wage sometimes, depending on where you teach. Why not get paid? Why not be creative, proactive, and just be comfortable. And I think that's one of the things to talk about, maybe why I'm less angry now, though I'm still kind of a human volcano. And Pittsburghers are very nice. Yeah. And a lot of my friends there are very nice people. And they don't quite, I think, get that I'm just always this spewing fountain of rage that is maybe not as spewy as I used to be.
I would agree.
Or less ragey as I used to be. And I think some of that is because I did put it in some kind of a professional context.
Okay.
I found a way to, like, almost kind of call people on their bullshit for a living, and it's called teaching freshman composition. Or, and I don't mean I'm, like, combative with my students, but I teach them critical thinking and reasoning, which are the skills I think I learned listening to Mike and the Mad Dog on WFAN and listening to my dad argue with his brothers a lot about sports.
You learned Mike and the Mad Dog?
I think I did.
Which is just Mike now.
Yeah, I know. And then, but Mad Dog's on XM satellite radio. I got it on the Buick. I've never listened to it.
I had that for a minute.
Yeah. I can listen to Z100, by the way, in my car in
Why
Pittsburgh.
Would you want to?
I never have. But I was like, oh, that's a choice I have now.
See, all right, it is.
That's a choice
funny.
I
what,
have.
What
now.
Was once the default is now the choice.
Yes. You know? Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was, hey, you know, I went to the left of the dial. I grew up Z100, and then I found out about the college radio and that cool Jersey Shore station that doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, yeah. What station was that?
106.3 or whatever, something
yeah,
like that. That Matt Pinfield used to be
on.
Yeah,
exactly.
And it was like, that was the thing that happened to me, too. It's like, I heard, Nirvana broke at just the right time. And I realized, okay, there is, because I always was interested in, okay, that's a little different, but I didn't know what that was, and so I didn't know there was a whole scene there.
You know what makes me sad about this, though?
What?
Because now that we're older, and now that
much older.
Now that I've, you know, kind of made a life of talking about music to kids and looking critically at the music industry, I like Nirvana's music. I love Nirvana's music. It still is incredible to me as music, but seriously, it was nothing. The way it came to me and you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it was totally manufactured.
It was. It was totally. Justin Bieber for angry white kids in the suburbs.
That's
like you and me.
What it was.
It
yeah,
was really packaged and handed to us.
Yeah.
Right. Now, it might have been a very legit thing.
Yes.
In Seattle for these early 20-somethings hanging out, mm-hmm. even though they're from Tacoma, right? But like that was a scene for them, and these bands really did know each other and were friendly, and they were happy that everybody was getting signed. But by the time it made its way across the country.
By the time it made it to Z100.
Yeah.
Which is where I first heard it.
Really?
That's where I first heard it.
I think I probably saw it on MTV.
See, I heard it on Z100. I remember the moment. I remember I was in my basement doing some putzing around with something.
Trains?
And that song
trains,
came, probably Trains.
Trains in your basement. Dude,
yeah.
Those were awesome.
And I heard it, and I stopped what I was doing. I was like, what the fuck is that? And then I panicked because I didn't know if I'd ever hear it again. And so I listened to the radio for 2 days nonstop, hoping to hear that song again, with a blank cassette on record pause.
That's the move.
And just waiting, and then they would go. I was afraid I was going to stretch out the tape or something. So I'd they're on a commercial. Stop.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
No, the song's ending. Okay, record pause, and it came on again. And of course, I missed half the song. So I got 2 seconds before the guitar solo, and then the end, and they still didn't say what it was. They still didn't say, and I was like, what is this song? You know, I don't know why I just didn't call them, but I was like, what did they do? Why? And that was it. And it sort of opened the door, and I was like, okay, I can't go back and listen to Nirvana now.
Why not?
I have a hard time. Like, stuff that I listened to a lot when I was younger, a lot, I have a very hard time. Though I will say I was feeling nostalgic driving to Brooklyn. So somewhere in the middle of Pennsylvania, I decided I want to listen to the Smiths. And I was shocked at how I was able to sing along to just about every song and know every word to Smith's Greatest Hits Volume 1 and 2.
Smith's is a band that I somewhat ashamedly admit that I never, quote, did, unquote. Mm. I have no problem with the Smiths, but there's only so many bands that you can invest time and psychic energy into. Mm. And for some reason, I just never got around to them. I feel kind of dumb because they seem to be a serious, thumbnail for this
generation.
This kind of sound.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, yeah, the Smiths, when people talk about them. Like, yeah, totally. That's totally a Johnny Marr guitar sound.
Yeah.
And I have no idea what
it was. In that period when I was getting my eyes open, there was a girl who then, I think she dropped out of our high school, who gave me a Smiths. I had a little crush, bit of a crush on her. And she gave me a Smiths Morris. I don't even remember her name. Wait, Jen Martino, maybe?
That name sounds familiar.
Yeah, if she liked this, where she went somewhere else, or she went and just got her GED, she was like, fuck school. But before she left, and wait, like we were passing notes back and forth, she gave me a Smiths Morrissey mixtape.
Is she my friend on Facebook and lives in Texas with her girlfriend?
No, you're thinking of Jen W.
Jen W, I don't know.
Walker?
No.
Yeah, no, she lives in Texas. No, I'm friends with her on Facebook, too. And she lives in Texas with her girlfriend.
By the way, I don't think I knew her. But anyway.
Anyway. So there was this girl, and I was like, hi. You know, it was the first person who liked me. And then, like, she disappeared. But I had... she disappeared. And then I had Last Night I Dreamt That Somebody Loved Me on cassette. And so I could just listen to everybody go, oh, God, it's so horrible. But again, that was that anger. That was, I think, what the Smiths and Morrissey was for me is that anger and that discomfort and that feeling of, like, God, people are vicious and stupid and everything is just stupid and prepackaged for us. And that was just it becoming internalized. Like, God, just the world's going to blow up. I mean, that's the other thing about New Jersey is, too, we can't end without talking about the fear and the paranoia. I remember, because I grew up, you know, it's weird, you know, we're in Brooklyn now, I live in a city now. But honestly, growing up, I never felt safe, which was a weird thing. Because again, it's that you lived in some place and it's out there, but it could come here and it's really not that far away, you know? Yeah. Or even, I remember in fifth grade, Mr. Yards explaining about what nuclear war was and how there's no way New Jersey would survive it.
See, I don't think I ever thought about that shit.
See, I did. Maybe I got that lesson. Maybe you weren't in that class, but in fifth grade, that was fifth fucking grade, was that if the bomb goes off, we're close enough to New York that we'll probably at least be a first strike target. And all the stuff that goes from New York to D.C. goes through New Jersey, and the Russians are going to want to nuke us.
Dude, how many times did you see Red Dawn as a kid? Like, did you watch it every night?
It was on HBO, man. That was the thing. It was on HBO, and HBO had three movies that they could show, and Red Dawn was one of them.
Yeah.
You know? So, oh, hey, Red Dawn's on. You know? Wolverines! You know?
I watched that.
And then there was the more empowering Top Gun later. Yeah.
Oh, Top Gun. I liked that movie for a minute.
Yeah, my sister thought still thinks it's like cinema verite, like it is vital to how she sees the world.
Wow, that's
sad and awful.
Okay, you said it. She's your sister,
so. And she's my sister. Who's anyway? She doesn't listen, so I can say whatever. She doesn't know this exists. She doesn't know that I have a podcast.
I don't think my sister does either. And my sister has chosen, or maybe not chosen. My sister is living the suburban American dream.
Mm.
As a matter of fact, she has done the ultimate suburban move. She now lives in a slightly classier suburb with her husband and two kids. She lives in Westfield.
Ooh.
Which is, you know, here's the thing. Obviously, I love my sister.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother-in-law is awesome. And their kids are fucking awesome. But, you know, it's... I envy the space they have.
Yeah.
I envy the big playroom in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
Where the kids have all their shit. I envy their backyard.
Mm-hmm.
I envy there being another room you can go to when everybody goes to sleep and you want to be a little louder.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't envy all the other things and choices they have to make or the limited choices they have in their lives. My sister and I, only 2 years apart from one another,
mm-hmm.
grew up in the same house with the same mom.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of drank the Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Like, she was like, this is what I want.
And I can say that, too. I mean, my mom, my parents, they moved out of South Plainfield into a gated golf community in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And I once said to my dad, you know, I asked my dad when it was happening, like, why are you doing this? He's like, well, there's 250 golf courses within 50 miles of the house. Story over. And he used to be able to walk to the clubhouse from his house to go golfing. There was a golf course in the development.
That's awesome.
For him.
Yeah.
But I said, after I visited the first time, I said to my dad, I think, and it might have pissed him off a little bit because I rejected his dream. I said, you found the one place more New Jersey than New Jersey. and then you build a house there. Like, you out-New Jersey'd yourself.
Yeah.
Because it's a community, because it's a gated community, you have to be in a car to come or go. You can't, there's, you can't right, walk
you,
in.
You told me about this.
You can't ride a bike in. You can't walk in. You can't be in a motorcycle. You have to be in a four-wheel car.
That's so weird.
To get in or out of that community.
That's really weird.
And so now that my dad's gone and my mom doesn't like to drive, it's a prison.
It's very strange. It's
very strange. And she still doesn't feel safe. And she still doesn't, you know, she doesn't do anything. But right. She watches a lot of TV. Yeah. And that becomes maybe the proxy for adventure, or the proxy for going down the street and trying a new pizza shop or a Thai restaurant or something.
I feel guilty when I watch TV.
Yeah.
In a suburban lack of choice kind of way.
Yeah, me too. I limit myself on the shows I'm allowed to watch. It's like, you know, it's like methadone. It's like, I'll have a little bit, and they'll take the edge off, and that's it.
Yeah, but streaming has ruined that. Now, I feel like I watch more TV than I did 10 years ago when I tried to give it up.
Mm.
But I feel a different kind of guilt because I'm not just giving what, I don't know. Yeah. It's all bullshit.
Yes. Speaking of bullshit, a moment that... And maybe we should move on to the bottom five probably soon. Yes. A moment that called me on my own bullshit was in the back of Douglas Copeland's Generation X, which is another, like, generational moment where I was like, oh, okay, this is what it is. He had all these statistics in the back, like the number of dead lakes in Canada. And my favorite was people who, quote, don't watch a lot of TV watch 16 hours of TV a week. And at the time in my life, I literally was like, I don't watch a lot of TV. And then I read that, and I calculated up, well, on Tuesday night and Monday night, there's Mythbusters, and then whatever the hell. And I realized that I had watched about 18 hours of TV a week on average. And I was like, ah! And of course, I was in suburban. Ooh, that was a big spike. Of course, I just fried probably somebody's eardrums in their shitty earbuds.
No, it'll just compress it, dude.
Yeah,
it'll be compressed.
It'll be compressed. Probably not, but... That's effort. Anyway, so I realized, and of course I was in suburban Philadelphia at the time when I read the book and I read that statistic, and I was like, oh, life is worthless and terrible.
Oh.
I need to make other decisions, and I'm angry again, you know, so. But on that note, I think it's now time for the bottom five. The bottom five is a series of questions not related to our main topic that are of a surrealistic and or philosophical nature.
Shit.
Are you ready?
In other words, fine. I'm always bad at these sort of things.
Okay, well, question one. The greatest hit question, I think. If reincarnation is real, and you had to come back as an infectious disease or illness, what kind of disease would you be?
Oh, my God.
See, forget this suburban, urban choice.
No, I...
But now you're like, you're single cell.
Oh,
if somehow, karmically, you're really fucked up, and you don't get a whole body, but instead you get to be bacteria or a germ or something.
Got to be something easily transmittable, because I like a lot of friends. I want to meet as many people as possible, but I'm not an oversexed person, so I don't know if it would be an STD sort of thing. Maybe chicken pox.
Ooh, chicken pox is a good one.
Like, I probably won't kill you unless you're an adult.
Yeah.
You can hang out with me for a little while, and then
move
on to somebody else.
Move on to somebody else, but maybe you'll get shingles later.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm still around. I'm still a part of your life. And I could kill you.
Later, yes.
Later. Yes.
All right, question two. What is your most irrational pet peeve?
Most irrational? I hate umbrellas.
Really?
I can't deal with fucking umbrellas. Like, seeing it over there across the room is fine.
Yeah, which we had to buy last night on our way to the theater, because we, of course, did not pack an umbrella.
I don't like getting under umbrellas. It's tough for me to walk up the block with a lot of other people.
Oh, yeah, that's...
I don't like umbrellas.
Umbrellas.
I can't use them.
Yes. All right, question three, which is sort of related. Name an item from your childhood that you lost or got rid of that you most wish you could get back.
Oh, man.
Something from that South Plainfield history. Some possession that you had that got...
When I was in college, like junior year, I just brought a car on campus. and it got broken into, and a bunch of shit got stolen. A really nice electric guitar I hadn't bought too long ago got stolen. A little toolbox that had a bunch of microphones and guitar effects pedals and cables got nicked. But those things didn't bother me as much as, and the passenger side back seat on the floor were two plastic trays of cassettes.
Oh.
And about 7 or 8 of them were not necessarily mixtapes that people had made for me, but things that I had sat around and taped off the radio.
Oh.
And some of them, like at that point, this was before the MP3 revolution, but I was a few bucks from the Princeton Record Exchange. I could probably go buy all those things for $2 on CD if I really wanted En Vogue on CD. But you know what I wouldn't have gotten? I wouldn't have gotten the tape that happened to have like some En Vogue song directly followed by the Ballad of Jane by LA Guns. And the only way I was going to get that,
that was
pre-Spotify, was these cassettes. And those were the things that when they were taken, I felt most like somebody had taken part of me with them.
Oh.
I think they ripped off the radio too, so I couldn't have played the tapes anyway. But those were that sucked.
That does suck, man. Oh, that's truly irreplaceable.
Yeah.
I still have some of those cassettes, by the way.
Good for you.
Yes. Question 4 of the living villains of history. Whose obituary would you like to write?
Living villains of history.
Living villain, evil person alive, or maybe not even evil person, but somebody who's just totally fucked up. Even it might be somebody who's evil, or it might be somebody who just is maybe that kind of tragic figure who just totally fucked up and will be remembered for totally fucking up or totally fucking it up for everybody.
I think it would have to be Bob Dylan.
Really? Bob Dylan?
He simultaneously fucked up folk music and being a songwriter for everybody that came after him. And I'd like to write that motherfucker's obituary. Talk about how he is simultaneously somebody that I worship and is still somehow overrated.
Well, you know, somebody said it. Actually, it might have been Derek on the last podcast. It was either during the podcast, because I don't listen to my own podcast, really, or before or after. He said about the whole thing about Bob Dylan is, you know, everybody does your songs better than you do. That's the Bob Dylan curse. Everybody plays Bob Dylan better than Bob Dylan.
I don't know. I've heard some pretty bad Bob Dylan. I've played some pretty bad Bob Dylan covers, to be honest.
Okay. Well, maybe not everybody, but you know what I'm saying? You can throw it together, get some competent musicians in a room. You're going to hear an amazing...
He's like the Arrested Development of musicians. There is no way that Bob Dylan could possibly be as good as the Cognoscenti would have you believe he is. Even though he is really good, there is no way he could possibly be as good or important as the Intelligentsia would have you believe.
I will...
The Arrested Development of musicians.
I will go with that wholeheartedly. I agree on that. I'm going to catch shit for it later.
For what? Making fun of Bob Dylan or Arrested Development?
Well, I can make fun of both.
Okay, good.
But again, that's still that part of me that never left the suburbs, is that things that make lots of people happy I find personally offensive.
Oh, don't even get me started.
And that whole, like, it's a manufactured thing. Go to Target or, you know, whatever, is a thing that people do and they have, and then they geek out over it. And, you know, you're talking to a man who's never seen a Star Wars movie in its entirety.
Dude, they're good.
Yeah.
They are. I'm just saying.
Okay.
They're good.
All right, that's great. Anyway.
Dick.
If you could unmake any invention, just wipe some piece of technology from the human record, what would it be?
Wow. God damn. Is there any invention that I really hate?
There's umbrellas.
Yeah, but like, I understand their value for other people.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I don't hate that they exist. I don't want to be under one of them. Man, if there's something... A Something be like a physical invention?
A physical invention. I would go physical unless it was something kind of that we made as a society or human interaction.
Like I can't say Western democracy. It's got to be like, it's got to be like,
well, no, that's an invention. You can say that. You can say Western democracy. Is that it? Or
it might be.
Or that we could just take out, or we'd be better off having lost it or never had it in the first place. Like for me, like saying God bless you after you sneeze.
Oh.
I refuse to do that, which is a weird thing as a professor and managing a room full of people. The people sneeze and I just kind of go, oh. Well, I'm expected to do something now.
I'm going to say capitalism.
Okay, capitalism. There you go.
There's nothing that... It's a good catch-all. There's so many things about it that piss me off.
Yes, absolutely. And on that note, I think that's about it.
Oh, okay.
Our next episode will eventually happen, and it will be about something.
Something.
Our homepage, where you can find new episodes, old episodes, is gonnadiepodcast.com. We're also on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Gonna Die Podcast. Fancy. And We're All Gonna Die on Facebook and Google Plus.
Wow. People, now, Google Plus is the thing?
I have a Google Plus even.
I have one too. But I've heard somebody describe that as like being invited to what sounds like the coolest party ever and showing up and realize that nobody else came.
Yes, that is exactly what it is. And so now you have stuff, and I'll have links on the website.
Yeah.
But we want to find out more about you and your music. Time for the plug.
I guess if you go to chrisqmurphy.com, it is nothing but a bunch of links.
Yes.
It will take, you can decide on what level you of my vanity you want to, you know,
indulge upon.
Yeah.
Do you have a professional Chris Q Murphy Music Google Plus?
No, I don't. There's hope for you then. I do have a Facebook.
You do have a face place. All right, and thanks to Brett Zork, as always, for the lovely theme music.
I love the theme music, Brett.
Yes, it's great. Later, meets.
Nice.